Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and as you surely know, we wrapped up a 60-day regular legislative session just this past weekend here in New Mexico. Lots went down. Lots did not go down, some might say. And we're going to talk about a wide variety of legislative topics today. We'll have Javier Gonzalez, chair of the Democratic Party of New Mexico, joining us in just a little bit. And we'll also hear from Republican Senator Stuart Engel. He is Senate Minority Leader, about how they felt their party's initiatives, whether they were successful or not this year. But first, we're going to start off with Steve Terrell of the Santa Fe New Mexican. Good morning, Steve. Thanks so much for joining me. So let's first talk about kind of what happened at the very last minute of the session. This tax package, there was an attempt to get a food tax in there. Can you explain kind of what led up to this last minute tax package and budget deal?
Well, it took just about everybody by surprise, including me. The whole cliche about legislature is nothing happens until the last 2 weeks. I think we're going to have to amend that. Nothing happens until the last hour. So that's basically what happened. The governor vetoed this bill having to do with the film industry. We all call it the Breaking Bad bill because it helped television productions. And she vetoed that but said, I'd be open to this if you pass comprehensive tax reform. Yeah, right. The day before the session's over, they're going to have comprehensive tax reform. Well, on the Senate floor, they... Mo Maestas introduced over on the House side a bill that basically revived the Breaking Bad bill. It passed easy, went over to the Senate. On the Senate floor, John Arthur Smith started putting all these amendments on there, all these tax things having to do with corporate taxes and manufacturers and all this stuff. And I thought, oh, this is going to go over well. And it did. It passed by a wide margin in the Senate. Went over to the House with about, I think, 35 minutes to spare, and then, they actually passed the darn thing at the very last second. Some say beyond the last second.
Depending on what clock was being used,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, depending who's Mickey Mouse we're talking about here. But it was quite surprising.
Well, and so the surprise being that this type of would you call it comprehensive tax reform?
Well, I don't know if I'd go it that far, but it was far more... There's far more to it than just the film industry stuff, that's for sure.
Well, there were some cuts to corporate income tax rates.
Yeah, a large cut.
A large cut. Talk a little bit more about some of the other aspects of that tax package.
What else was there in there? They're going to make large box stores pay state corporate taxes the same way everybody else does.
Is that the combined reporting?
Combined reporting, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's incentives for manufacturers. There's something complicated. They're talking about not bringing back the food tax per se, but doing away with the state's the hold harmless. Boy, this is getting all out of the weeds.
We're getting really deep here for a moment, but...
The state and counties used to be reimbursed by, or currently are reimbursed by the state for the money they would have gotten from their food tax. And they did away with that reimbursement over a period of 15 years. But they put in a clause at the last minute cities won't be able to raise the food tax.
Okay. We are also joined this morning by Marisa DeMarco. She's with the New Mexico Compass. It's nmcompass.com. And Matthew Reichbach, he is with the New Mexico Telegram or nmtelegram.com. And by the way, I have links posted to each of your sites, including Steve, including your Roundhouse Roundup blog. They're all posted at kunm.org, so you can find them and see the coverage that these folks are producing. Marisa, let me go to you. What were your reactions to the last minute tax package that was passed apparently at the very last moment of the session as the clock was winding down? Your reaction to some of the aspects of that bill?
Well, I think Steve touched on this. A lot of stuff really does happen at the very, very last minute. And we have a piece. The New Mexico Compass has a piece today by Senator Jerry Ortiz-Pino, it's an opinion piece kind of talking about how rushed everything felt, how people didn't have a chance to really read and look things over and debate things. And that's kind of a crazy way for those larger reforms to happen, is what he's saying. So I think, you know, it would be better if some of that could be spread out more over the session so that all of the legislators and lawmakers feel like they have a chance to really check things out and know what it is that they're voting on and really be aware of what the content of those measures are.
Matt, there have been some critics of the way that this went down who said, look, this, even some of the Democrats in the House, I think it was Mimi Stewart, who said, look, we didn't even have time to read this bill before we were voting on it. Talk to me about what you think was happening there. Why did Democrats support something that they hadn't read and maybe felt might not have supported if they had read the entire thing?
I think that it was Dan Boyd at the Journal. He was in the press box, and he said, man, they really don't want to do a special session.
Yeah.
that was one of the things. They didn't want to have to come back, because if they didn't pass that tax bill, the budget would have been vetoed, and they would have been back in a few weeks or a few months, sometime before July, and to try to pass a budget and pass another omnibus tax bill. And we had KUNM intern Andy Lyman on our podcast yesterday, and which will go up later today, and he spoke to Bill McCamley, who was very upset about how things went down, because he was scheduled to speak on the bill, but they just cut off debate before anybody could speak. And then he also spoke to Brian Egoff, that I think Steve speaks to Brian a lot, and Brian Egoff basically said, hey, everybody should be reading all these bills anyway, because they knew that these tax packages were something we could consider. So if you didn't read these, then it's on you, and you should trust some of the longer-serving senators or representatives to, you know, kind of guide the path. And but the way it went down at the end, there was a lot of people that were not happy with that. I mean, I've gotten a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails. People told me it was just absurd. Shady was a word I heard used a lot.
Is it mostly Democrats who are criticizing and Republicans who are supporting what went down?
Yeah, it's definitely mostly Democrats. A lot of progressive Democrats don't like a lot of these portions of the corporate tax cut that Steve is talking about. They think that that's going to cut a huge hole in the budget. And the big problem they had with it is they didn't know what was going to be in it, because the FIR, the Fiscal Impact Report, which is their god most times, didn't even come out until yesterday.
This is the Fiscal Impact Report is the report that is produced that analyzes what impact on the budget a particular bill could have. Is this bill going to cost the state X amount of dollars for staff in order to provide this, or et cetera, et cetera? And so the Fiscal Impact Report on the tax bill didn't come out until yesterday, you say?
Yeah, it came out yesterday morning, I believe. And it's kind of complicated, because it is a huge, complicated 35-page bill. And I think at one point it's going to cost the state $55 million, they said. And plus the counties and the cities, they're going to have to, you know, a lot of them feel they're going to have to pay the brunt of this. Farmington's mayor said it yesterday that, you know, hey, this is going to hit us hard. Us in San Juan County, it's going to hit us hard, because the hold harmless provision, which is kind of in the weeds, like Steve said, but that's a big part of their budget. That's a part of their budget every year. It can be a little bit more cut out for the next 15 years. Or, well, 2 years they get – free, and then 15 years after that.
But it's spread out. It's implemented over time.
Yeah, but they're just saying this is going to hurt us.
Thing is, all these ideas, all these elements of it had been discussed in interim committees, and there'd been bills here and there with all these basic elements, but it hadn't been all together in one package studied. And I think there's some valid points to those who are saying that, hey, you know, 35 minutes before the session is not enough time to, you know, not even one committee meeting on this. And all these other bills, you know, a lot more minor bills than that, they say, oh, we need to put this through three committees because we need to really study this issue. Then this huge thing comes in, like, well, okay.
And one of the points that Jerry Ortiz Pina brought up, too, is that cities and counties may have to offset the loss in revenue by raising gross receipts taxes, which will affect everyone. So I think that's an interesting point, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's take a step backwards in time, back from this last day, and talk about some of the other. The other things that went down. So we had the tax package, which is separate from the budget,
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the budget bill that that Susana Martinez has indicated that she will sign as a result of the tax package, right? That in conjunction she will sign the budget. Matt, what are some aspects of the budget that you think are important to highlight?
Well, a lot of the budget really wasn't that controversial. They had agreements on a lot of stuff, but there was kind of a mutiny a little bit on one little tiny provision, about $3 million on merit pay for teachers, a pilot program for merit pay for teachers. The House version had that. The Senate version came back, and they stripped that out. Instead, they gave $2 million for teachers from high-performing schools going to low-performing schools.
And this was the merit pay piece was one of Governor Susana Martinez's initiatives, right?
Yeah, it's like, been one of her big initiatives since she got in, her and her secretary-designate, Hannah Scandera. I don't know if we're going to get into that.
We're going to talk about that a little later.
But that's one of their big education initiatives, and the Democrats just say, hey, this doesn't work. It's going to cost us more money. Instead, let's do this. And because of that, a lot of House Republicans decided not to – I think all the House Republicans – decided not to vote for the concurrence on the budget. And that was really like the main focus there. But then, you know, you can get into, I think it's like $2.43 billion is to education, just K through 12. A lot of that stuff is just getting down to listing off numbers, I think. But that was a big controversy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Marisa, what about you? Thoughts on the budget, pieces of that process that you think are important to highlight this morning?
One of the things that we covered with regard to the budget and education was the split between above the line and below the line funding for public education. And to explain that a little bit, above the line funding is kind of funneled through a formula to schools, and they can mostly decide how they're going to spend that money, although the education department has to approve it. Below the line funding is money that's set aside for special projects. So that's money that's directed more specifically and given to schools for a particular aim. Part of the objection to the budget bill by some educators was that they reduced the amount of above the line funding and increased the amount of below the line funding. So there's kind of an interesting debate surrounding that. And I believe it was the Journal that opined that below-the-line funding is actually beneficial because it holds schools accountable to producing results from the money they receive. It's almost kind of like a grant of some kind.
That they're doing special projects with.
Right. Okay. And rural school districts objected, saying that they were going to have to really cut programs with the loss of some of the above-the-line funding. So that was something that we looked into a lot with regards to the budget.
Steve, what about you? What are some of the highlights of the budget bill that was passed and the debate around it that you think are kind of central?
For the first time in, I believe, 5 years, state employees got a raise.
Right.
A whopping 1%.
1% raise.
And with all the pension stuff going up, it's basically amounts to nothing. Technically, they probably will be getting a raise, assuming the governor signs it. She didn't want to give any raise at all, but they will be getting a 1% raise, which will probably be going away to additional other things.
In the sense that let's go to the pension fund issue then and talk about that. Were state employees' contributions to pension funds increased in legislation that was passed this year?
I think for new hires.
For new hires.
If I'm not mistaken, Carter Bundy will probably be texting me now. But I think it's for new hires.
Carter Bundy is with AFSCME.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And that's an example of a bill, a very controversial issue area, but all sides met, all sides hammered it out, sometimes hammered each other, and but they got it worked out, and they're still working on it as it's going through the committee process and everything, but that's an example of why you should get a head start working on these big things rather than slapping it together at the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts on the pension plan, Matt?
Well, I didn't cover the pension plans all that much, but I know that was, like Steve said, a big battle that they were discussing through the entire session. I think at one time it went to the same committee like three times in a row. So it just kept getting they discuss it, and then it would get rolled over again, discussing it rolled over. But that is basically just because there's such a huge unfunded liability for these pensions, and the people who are getting the pensions, they're saying, wait a minute, you can't take our money away. this is something that was promised, it's something we're planning on for when I'm 65 and I'm retiring. But I know that they're going to be – I'm pretty sure that, that, like Steve said, the new hires are going to be paying a little bit more. I don't think that the state portion went up a little bit, but I'm sure that Carter will be texting me as well, telling me telling me if I'm wrong. Well,
the cost of living adjustment was the big thing the cost of living adjustments will be less and less frequent, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. We are taking your calls this morning. We're interested in hearing about your take on this legislative session. Are you pleased with the outcome? Are you concerned about some of the things that went down? Anything surprising that you noted during this session or kind of unsung successes that you would like to point out that lawmakers achieved that you believe were successful? In your mind, the local number to call is 277-5866. You can also call toll free 877-899-5866. And you can post your comments online at KUNM.org. And you can send an email to callinshow@KUNM.org. I'd like to bring into the conversation Javier Gonzalez. He is the chair of the Democratic Party of New Mexico. Good morning, Javier. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Elaine. It's good to be with you. And gosh, you know, I didn't know Steve got up so early, and good to hear him out here this morning.
It's special for me.
I slept in the studio last night.
I get to see Matt's tweets early in the morning, so I figured he'd be on. But good to be with Steve and Matt, and obviously we enjoyed their reporting. During this legislative session, Elaine, it was a big session for a lot of issues facing certainly New Mexico's families, and I'm real proud of our Democrats who stood up on important issues. Our leadership, both in Speaker Martinez and Leader Sanchez, who really had to navigate through some very difficult days there at the 60-day session, and of course, standing up to the governor and some of her divisive issues were things that they had to deal with while promoting legislation that was important to we feel the Mexicans.
Well, so let me ask you, Javier, was there a number one priority for Democrats this session?
Well, the number one priority for Democrats going into this was 100% focused on job creation for New Mexico families. It's no secret that New Mexico over the last 2 years under the Susana Martinez administration has continuously lost jobs month over month. And we see and that started with, her outright opposition to the film industry and capping those subsidies that could go to creating jobs right here in New Mexico. And it continued over the two-year period. So Democrats knew going into this session that we had to deliver on legislation that was going to be solely focused on New Mexico families. So how do we do that? I mean, first, we focused on getting these shovel-ready jobs, over $224 million ready to go into New Mexico communities. And we know construction many times leads the way when it comes to economic recovery. We passed the minimum wage law that would allow New Mexicans earning minimum wage of $7.50 to go to $8.50. They passed the health care exchange law, which brings into focus the president's Affordable Health Care Act to ensure that New Mexicans had access to affordable and accessible health care. So when you look at the major accomplishments of the Democratic legislature, it really was focused all on New Mexico families. Whenever you have a Republican governor who's focused on promoting divisive issues, rolling back progressive legislation on education and other areas, we look to this and the accomplishments of the Democratic legislature as being significant.
What, in your mind, Javier, was the biggest disappointment this year for Democrats?
I think a lot of it had to be, some of the disappointment had to be that there was so much energy focused on divisive issues. I mean, once again, the governor leads her way with trying to roll back licenses for undocumented immigrants. I mean, so much of that time could have been spent on education reform and ensuring that our teachers are paid well, and that when we talk about outcomes for our educational system, we're really focused in the classroom and assuring that our kids are successful there through good pay with our teachers and other measures. But no, we focused, we had to spend time dealing with her issues in that area. I mean, I think it was a big disappointment when she initially, vetoed the Breaking Bad legislation that would have taken the film production credit from 25 percent up to 30%. So, you know, it was one of those areas where, you know, we would take two, three steps forward and she would push, you know, some of her divisive issues that would cause us to have to move back. But in light of all that, I think you guys kind of led the way into this interview. We were still able to create solvency with our pension funds. We were able to make sure that we created fair pay for women, which, gosh, I mean, here we are in 2013, and we're just dealing with that issue now. But thankfully, it was done with. And then, of course, you know, there's the much discussed tax bill that came in to the very end. I mean, one of the issues that we have been focused on over the last 7 years, and I think Steve has covered it, you know, continuously, is Peter Wirth's effort to create combined reporting for people like Walmart and others who are able to have a presence in our state and not report the amount of sales that they were having, and in effect be able to get out of paying their share of taxes. You know, say what we will about how this final bill came to be, the fact is that, you know, New Mexico small businesses now know that the big guys are going to be treated exactly the same way that they are.
Javier Gonzalez is chair of the Democratic Party of New Mexico. Matthew Reichbach, did you have a question?
Yeah, I know that you talked about the tax package that passed. A few Democrats that I spoke to have been concerned about the way it passed. Has anybody expressed concern to you or anyone else in Democratic leadership about that?
No, you know, and I think, you know, Matt, at the end of the day, you know, what I appreciate very much about Speaker Martinez is that, you know, look, he's going to lead. He recognizes that there are things that need to get done on behalf of New Mexico families. But he also has allows for a very independent thinking caucus. And, you know, the fact that people were concerned with it, I think they have access to Speaker Martinez. They're going to talk about this. They're going to get the issues addressed. But in the end, look, you know, New Mexico families are all for the better for Democrats and what they've done during the session.
Marisa, did you have a question for Javier?
Sure. I was wondering what, if any, impact you think this session will have on the next round of elections?
Well, look, I mean, this session was able to prove to New Mexicans that when Democrats are certainly in the majority, that they will see legislation that's focused on the middle class, on New Mexico families. From day one, Democrats focused on job creation bills. We focused on ways to try and reform our educational system and making it more affordable. We focused on this Health Exchange Act that would allow the president's affordable health care law to come into New Mexico. This session is a clear indication that when Democrats have the majority, or in fact, when we take the governorship in 2014, that it'll be New Mexico's working class families that are going to be a priority, not some of these out-of-state special interests that certainly paid for Susana Martinez's last election and clearly are going to want to do the same in the 2014 election.
Steve Terrell.
Javier, for all the talk about standing up to the governor, it seems like in that last hour of the session, she got basically everything she wanted as far as the tax stuff goes.
I don't think so, Steve. You know, and look, I mean, you know, again, one of the things that I appreciate about, you know, both the speaker and the leader is that they knew coming into this session that if they were going to focus on the priorities, that there would have to be some level of compromise. I mean, anyone who understands when you have, you know, a Republican governor who will veto almost anything that focuses on New Mexico families and has done so, that they had to find compromise to make sure some of these critical issues got through. So, you know, I think that it's unfair to say that they didn't stand up to her when they were working to try and get compromise on some of these issues that they knew that were important for New Mexico's families. But look, they stood up to her when it came to her trying to push issues on rolling back some of the some education reform that we wanted to see move forward. I mean, she clearly has continued to push this issue of social promotion. She clearly has continued to push the issue of energy focused on doing away with licenses for undocumented immigrants. And we stood up to her on those. Those are things that New Mexicans really don't want their government focusing on. They want them to focus on jobs. And when you look at the scorecard, it was the Democratic legislature that had job creation legislation that passed.
Javier Gonzalez, chair of the Democratic Party of New Mexico, thanks so much for joining us for this brief segment this morning.
Appreciate it, Elaine. Thank you guys very much.
All right.
Take care.
You have a good one. We are talking about the outcome of this year's 60-day legislative session. We just heard from Javier Gonzalez, chair of the Democratic Party of New Mexico. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear from Republican Senator Stuart Ingle. He is Senate Minority Leader. We're also hearing from Steve Terrell. He is with the Santa Fe New Mexican. He also writes the Roundhouse Roundup blog, which I had to scramble around trying to find out what to call this show. Because I didn't want to call it the Roundhouse Roundup, because that's your blog name, even though I did put a photo of some cowboys rounding up some cattle on our website as the image for what we're talking about today.
Maybe it should have been herding cats.
Herding cats, I thought about that. Matthew Reichbach is with New Mexico Telegram, or nmtelegram.com, and Marisa DeMarco is with New Mexico Compass, or nmcompass.com. Again, links to all of their online news sources are available at kunm.org. We're going to take a quick break, And we'll be right back with more of your calls and soon with Republican Senator Stuart Ingle. This is KUNM.
The University of New Mexico and KUNM remind you that the KUNM Radio Board election is coming to a close. Voting is open to contributing listeners and KUNM volunteers. Ballots are due no later than April 1st at 5 p.m. Please mail your ballot in a timely fashion to the address on the ballot, or hand deliver your ballot to the University Secretary's office in Scholes Hall on the UNM campus. Please do not deliver your ballot to the KUNM studios. Thanks for your participation.
Classical dance of India beckons and mystifies with its undulating rhythms and the sinuous melodies of its music. Nrityagram Dance Ensemble creates dances rooted in tradition and flavored with contemporary dance notes. Their shows blend the sweetness and the spice of Indian dance and have been heralded around the world. They come to Popejoy Hall for a single performance Friday, March 22nd. For tickets and information, visit popejoypresents.com. A message from the tax-exempt Popejoy Hall.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. It's about 8:31, and we are digesting and processing the 2013 regular legislative session. It was a 60-day session this year. Lots went down. And Steve Terrell of the Santa Fe New Mexican, Matthew Reichbach of nmtelegram.com, and Marisa DeMarco of nmcompass.com are here to kind of process with us. But first, let's go to Senator Stuart Ingle. He is a Republican. He is the Senate Minority Leader. Good morning, Senator Ingle. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you, Elaine.
Sure thing. Sure thing. I want to ask you the same questions that I asked Javier Gonzalez just a few moments ago. What in your mind was the highest priority for the Republican Party in the session this year, and were you able to achieve it?
Oh, you know, Elaine, I don't really look at the legislative session that way. You know, there were some tax cuts and things, and things done for business that certainly were important, but I think, you know, the way the legislature worked and the votes on the floor and things like that, I think generally speaking there was a pretty good attitude on both sides of the aisle that we're trying to, you know, move New Mexico forward as far as attracting business, and I don't really define anything by what was most important to which party.
All right. Well, talk to me a little bit about your reaction to the tax package that was, you know, kind of moved through at the very last minute of the session. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think it was pretty good. It got some things done that I know Senator Wirth there in Santa Fe has wanted to get the combined reporting work done, and for the last several years, and that was included in there. And there was some decrease in the corporate tax over a few years, and the whole harmless stuff that's basically, you know, associated with the food tax and some of the other stuff that was going on, grocery receipts tax. I've been there in the legislature several years, and the grocery receipts tax was something that was on almost every transaction in New Mexico when I was first elected, going to the doctor, prescriptions, everything you bought basically had a grocery receipts tax on it, and we've removed some of those things over the years, and primarily the things that associated with, you know, food products were the biggest item, and not that anybody wants food tax back, but the thing about it is over the years the definition has gotten so huge of what is food, like 7 donuts is food and 6 isn't, and 6 Cokes is food and 1 isn't, and, you know, it's just the thing is it was eating about $200 million out of the budget of the state every year, and it was kind of keeping growing. So we had to do something to phase that out a little bit and yet give cities and counties a way to, if they needed to get some of those dollars back. And there's a 3/8 authorization in that bill, too, that cities and counties can do.
So, Senator Engel, we have a caller on the line. Her name is Maggie Hart, and she has a comment about this hold harmless issue. So let's get Maggie on the line. Maggie, you're on the air. Let's have your question join in this conversation about the hold harmless aspects of the tax package.
Well, good morning, Elaine, and thank you very much for taking my call. And I was really happy to hear Senator Engel talk about that phase out of the hold harmless payments, because those represent a significant hit to local governments. And I speak from the perspective of a county official. I don't know how we're going to accommodate that. We are still responsible for running the jail, paving roads, all of the responsibilities of local governments. And losing those payments is a very significant problem for us. And to say, well, we gave local governments 3/8 of the cent more tax authority, that still has to go to the voters. And I think, everybody recognizes that is very difficult to do, very difficult to get the public to pass additional gross receipts tax. So, again, I think, Senator Engel, he's the first person I've heard really talk about this, because in that last-minute tax bill, that was rolled in. It was never, not in any committee, that was never raised, the repeal of that hold harmless provision. So, again, when you ask callers to call in, what's your biggest disappointment, I think that's mine, because I don't know, again, how local governments, our cities, that's at least a $30 million hit every year to the city of Albuquerque, probably $15 to $18 million to Bromeo County. And I'm guessing all the smaller local governments around the state are going to have a real problem accommodating that.
Thanks, Maggie, for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Senator Engel, your response.
Well, she's right. There is going to be some stuff that over the next 15 years, and doesn't start for a couple of years, actually, and the cities and counties are going to have to make up some way or another. But the state government is going to have to make up. Close to $200 million is kind of what nobody really knows for sure, but it's close to that, $150 to $200 million that the state's having to make up the difference. And the counties and the cities are going to help a little bit on that. And I understand if I were in a county commission seat or a city council seat, I'd be upset with the legislature, too.
Marisa DeMarco, a question you had.
Sure. I guess I was going to jump topics a little bit. I read that you're a farmer. Is that right, sir?
Yes, I am. When it rains, I don't irrigate. I wait for it to rain, and I've just gone through the 2012 is the worst year I've ever had, and it's just awful down here in this part of the country. We have blowing sand a lot anyway, and we certainly have it now. It's not blowing right now, but it just doesn't take anything to the whole country. The sky's just turned red, and it's not just here. It's all over the Texas panhandle and Oklahoma panhandle. It's just we're really in a super, super drought. But
yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you.
Rain.
I'm sorry. I wanted to ask you about some related bills. There was the genetically modified food labeling bill, which did not pass. There was a bill to include New Mexico-grown produce in public schools, which also didn't pass. And there was also your bill to repeal some fruit and vegetable standards for apples, pears, and peaches, which did pass both chambers. So I was going to ask what your thoughts were on those three measures.
Well, the first measure that you were talking about, I think the labeling part of it, is that what you were speaking
mm-hmm,
of?
The genetically modified food labeling.
Yeah, I just think we're a little bit hasty going forward on that right now until we really figure out, who's growing what.
Mm-hmm.
If they're really growing what they say they're growing. It's real easy to say, I'm this and I'm that, but it's one of those things that's not easy to do. And the constituents I represent certainly weren't in favor of that.
Mm-hmm.
And What was the next one?
The New Mexico grown produce in public schools.
Well, there again, I don't know that I necessarily have a problem with that, as long as there's an inspection process there, but the inspection part is up to the Agriculture Department, and I never did hear that bill. I wasn't on a committee that heard it, so I'm not really familiar with it.
And then there was your measure to repeal some fruit and vegetable standards.
What that was the Agriculture Department out of New Mexico Department of Agriculture wanted to, they had some real old laws, and that's what was repealed, and the new laws that were passed, you know, in the last 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of it. All that did was repeal some stuff that was passed in the 20s. That's all it did.
Great. Thank you.
Matt Reitbach, did you have follow-up with Senator Engel?
Yeah, Senator, back to the tax package. I see that there's a New Mexico Tax Research Institute report, and on that combined reporting, it looks like that Walmart might be exempted from that combined reporting. Do you think this is one of the effects of that tax package maybe not going through the committee process, that there's going to be these sort of carve-outs we didn't see coming?
Okay, now repeat your question real quick again. Slow down just a little bit.
There's a report by New Mexico Tax Research Institute that says that Walmart might be exempted from Senator Worth's combined reporting. Do you think that we're going to see more of this sort of thing since the?
Well, I don't think that's correct, but I'm not going to argue that. I haven't seen that report.
Okay, but do you think there's going to be some changes from what we expected from just that not all of these portions fully went through the committee process?
Well, I can't. That Combined Reporting Act has been through the committee process I don't know how many times over the past few years. And, every tax law that I've ever been around up there, there's always an aspect to it that it was maybe not written well enough to fit a particular corporation, or the revenue estimates of what it would do were either way low or way, way too high. So it's... that's we meet every year, and if there's an adjustment that needs to be made there, it certainly can be made. I can't tell you that for sure, because I'm not a CPA, and that's really who defines, what tax law is and who it applies to. We've passed some tax laws there over the past few years that, we thought would cost $40 million, and they cost $120 million, and. It's just one of those things of how it's defined by the accountants and the folks that are actually out there in that tax process. So,
Steve Terrell, questions?
Senator, I know you've been in the Senate a long time.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Real good. How you doing?
Good, partner.
Just in general, I know you've seen it all in the legislature in the last 30 years or so. But this the way the tax bill came together at the very last minute, as others have pointed out, no committee hearings or anything. Do you think that's the best way to do business? Do you think there's a better way to maybe have handled that?
There probably is, in a sense. But the thing about it is that there's things there that are passed that won't really take effect for 2 years. And if we if there's some things in there that need to be fixed, we can fix it.
Okay.
And there were about three different amendments that were somewhat similar to that, and I had one that was going to be 20 years instead of 15. And then mine didn't have a couple of the other things in it what was ended up there with on the floor.
Well, so this is Elaine again. Let me ask you one last question, Senator Engel. What was your...
Please call me Stuart.
All right, Stuart. I love first name basis. You got it.
I do too.
Stuart, what was your biggest disappointment this session? The thing you most regret not being successful with?
Oh, Elaine, I try not to get to anything that important that I'm really, grossly disappointed with. I think this session really, we did some really tough things in the legislature that had to be done, and probably the retirement stuff is as far as anything was as important as anything. I'm a little bit I think it's a shame when you put somebody through 20 hours of hearings like they did the education secretary and don't bring her to the floor for a vote. And that was because she had the votes to be confirmed. And I've been there a long time, and I think that's the – we've had those kind of hearings before, but at least the person was brought to the floor for a vote. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a disappointment to me, that the Secretary of Education wasn't at least given a vote on the floor of the Senate where she would have passed.
Well, we will continue this conversation about the confirmation hearings of Hannah Scandera, the Education Secretary Designate. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Stuart, truly appreciate it. And we are going to continue this conversation. I'm going to take this question about Hannah Scandera's confirmation hearing to each of the panelists. But I'd also like to invite listeners, you are welcome to join the conversation this morning. Your biggest disappointment from the session this year, or something that you feel was a really, really great achievement that you would like to point out. The number to call locally is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send an email to callinshow@kunm.org, or you can post your comments online. And let's go now to Mimi in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mimi. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a very specific question and then a more general comment. My specific question is, I want to know if any of the various bills that were floating out there regarding the lottery scholarship and finding a way to make it solvent long term, if any of those bills arrived at the governor's desk, and if so, what specific provisions mm-hmm. does that include? And then my comment is in terms of the last minute tax package, that's not the first time historically that kind of thing has happened. I don't think that you can call it good government when people are voting on things they haven't had time to read, much less digest and analyze and know the fiscal impacts. And it seems to me that the legislature needs to look at structurally what can they do to make it work better. I don't know if maybe putting a cap on the number of bills that could be introduced, putting a deadline as time after which no new bills could be introduced, getting rid of a lot of the frivolous stuff that goes on, but it seems to me that they need a good government committee to make the legislature produce better government. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Marisa, what are your thoughts on this? First, the comment that Mimi had about how things work at the state legislature and her ideas about how things might work better.
I completely agree with most of what she's saying. I think that it can be a real challenge, especially when you're covering the legislature and you're not able to be in Santa Fe the entire time for committees to get committee meetings to be canceled or pushed back with little warning, for you to show up to see an issue discussed and it's deferred. And I think, you know, long periods of time go by where very little seems to really be happening, and it's probably that there's a lot of machinations in the background that are what's really going on. But as far as, you know, being transparent to the public, and as far as, you know, people being able to attend meetings to see issues that they care about being discussed, and then to have everything come down on the very, very last day, it's almost like, you know, if you care about an issue, you should just show up and see what happens on Saturday, because that's when it's probably going to happen. But it doesn't really give everybody a chance to kind of vet the material that's in front of them.
Steve Terrell, is this, I mean, you have said that this last minute tax package was relatively unusual for the New Mexico State Legislature, but at the same time, is it also kind of a sign of the way things work in general over time?
Well, yeah, just the way it's set up, things aren't going to happen. Like I said earlier, we used to say it was the last 2 weeks. Now it's the last hour. But that's just kind of way that things work, and especially going through committee processes and stuff like that. The caller had a question about the lottery scholarships. I don't think those bills passed.
I mean, there were several measures. One, I think, raised the GPA for eligibility. There was another one that I know made it through one of the chambers that expanded the eligibility for students to attend tribal colleges.
Right, right.
I'm not sure if that actually made it to the governor's desk.
Yeah, I don't know, think that made it to the Senate. But I might be wrong. I have to check the bill locator again. One thing the lady said that I really agree with, I've put this in my column before, is there should be some kind of limit, maybe not on bills, but I think every legislator should have maybe two memorials a session.
I think that's too many.
And yeah, you may be right. And I don't think they should be discussed within the last 2 weeks of the legislature. If you're memorial honoring some football team someplace or making some strange historical point that sometimes they do, I think debate on memorials should be cut off till the, you know, sometime like 2 weeks before the end of the session.
Being because
they were discussing memorials the last day in the Senate, and that's just I ran into some lobbyists. I know he goes, "Do you believe this? They're talking about a memorial."
Well, so explain the difference between a memorial and a piece of legislation.
Well, a piece of legislation has the force of law. You pass a law, you know, you can no longer sell bananas
with spots.
With bananas with spots, you know, you legalize gay marriage, or you do this or that. Those are bills, and they have the force of law. Memorials say we should do this. Some memorials are calling for studies. We'll get those out of the way the first couple of weeks of the session, you know, when they aren't really doing much. To be discussing his memorial as the last day of the session or anywhere near the last day of the session is just ridiculous.
Is the memorial the equivalent of an earmark, but just for a community's?
No, I
know it doesn't have any money, but is it the idea of, like, it's one of the ways that lawmakers bring prestige or recognition to their communities?
Yeah, I think maybe it's a way to shut people up.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah,
too many memorials.
Well, the memorials thing, I think we could go, ironically, an entire hour on that, how they shouldn't be discussed as much. But I did want to point out that regular bills, they are cut off from being introduced halfway through the session. So 30 days in, that was when regular bills could no longer be introduced. I know the caller was worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
Memorials can be introduced until the last day if they want. But like Steve said, they don't have force of law. You can have, you know, Espanola Day. Was one that they have every year, which we get to see some good mariachi music. But you have to wonder if when time's running out and when they have to wait until the last second or possibly past the last second to pass a tax bill, you have to wonder if it's worth it.
Do I have consensus from you three that memorials kind of represent a form of procrastination?
Yeah, and you know, in the early parts of the session, there's nothing wrong with that because they are waiting for bills to be printed and bills, you know, things to come down, amendments to be. You know, sometimes procrastination's okay. I don't mind when they joke around on the floor like they do a lot. Some citizens say, "Oh, they're wasting time doing this." Well, they're
always waiting for something.
Yeah, they're always waiting on something. That doesn't bother me.
And it is a community. I mean, it's a community.
But the whole thing about discussing some toothless memorial on the last day is just maddening.
Let's take a few more calls. Bob in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to comment on what I thought overall it was of the session. It really hurt the public and workers and really benefited corporations. And it's more, looks like a part of the whole global austerity kind of programs where the economic crisis is being shifted onto workers and this mythical thing that business is going to pull us out of it. But it's this business thing that has created this crisis. And as an educator, I think what they did with the ERB, the teachers, educators' pensions, and the para plan for public workers is really detrimental. They split up the workforces between older and younger workers for benefits, or pulling the COLA back from people and their retirement plans are already there, which is going to hurt people if inflation comes back in the economy again. There's going to be no way to counter that. So overall, this is a real detrimental thing, and the employees' and workers' contributions are going to go up, whereas the state is not going to really be assuming its role and managing these plans very well. And I think we have a big crisis there, but it's being shifted off onto the public workers and teachers, and I think it's going to force a lot of people into retirement, which is we're going to lose people, And it's not a good plan that came out of this.
Thanks for your call, Bob. Let's go to Susan. Good morning, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine. This is Susan Louvet from New Mexico, from the Women's Focus and New Mexico Women's Agenda. And I wanted to talk about some successes for women in this session. One is the Fair Pay for Women Act that was carried by Brian Egolf and by a similar one by Senator Lopez on the Senate side. And that's already been signed by the governor. And then we had House Bill 304, Human Trafficking Civil Remedies and Services, that provides protections and services for human trafficking victims. And that's up on the governor's desk waiting to be signed.
And the Fair Pay for Women Act, what does that do that's different from what the federal Lilly Ledbetter Act does?
Well, it provides that you can sue in state courts so that you don't have to go far away to do a lawsuit. And it also provides that you can get damages, better system as far as damages are concerned, so it makes it worthwhile to actually bring a lawsuit. But there's a protection for businesses if they think that they are following fair pay standards and it turns out they're not, then they are held harmless from punitive damages.
Great. Thanks a lot for your call, Susan. Marisa DeMarco, Steve Terrell, and Matthew Reichbach, I'm going to end with one question, and I want to go around. The question is, the dead bill that will be coming back like a zombie next year.
Oh, only
Matt.
One?
Okay, well, say three.
Well,
one to three.
Gun control bill, that's one that died in the last seconds. That'll be coming back. You can go through a whole list. Anything basically that failed, it'll be back.
Well, what specifically do you think is going to rise to the top?
I think that maybe Peter Wirth might come back with this expanded combined reporting. That would be interesting. And then we'll see some of the election fixes. Mm-hmm. Like letting 17-year-olds vote in primaries, that's one that comes to mind. And, that's just such a broad question. Mm-hmm. It's hard to think of.
Steve Terrell, zombie bills?
Well, for all you druggos out there, the House actually passed a bill to reduce drastically penalties against marijuana possession of small amounts.
But it did not make it through the Senate?
It kind of stalled in the Senate. It was really late in the session by then. And it passed the House. I was impressed they did that. And I think it may come back again, not next year, but in 2 years when the 60-day session.
Mm-hmm. Marisa, zombie bills?
I think the bill that would have made websites or forums be considered a house of prostitution might come back.
Hmm.
That didn't pass. And that was, of course, related to the case of F. Chris Garcia and Southwest Companions.
Right, right. What about the bill that passed that shields legislators' discussions and email from the Inspection of Public Records Act?
Well, that's going to be going to court. I think we can. That's going to be going to court. So,
and I would imagine that you all would like to see that not go on the books.
Well, I mean, that's. I think that's one part that journalists can be a little bit biased on, is keeping open records open, and I think a lot of people are hoping that that does. The court rules on the right side there.
Yeah, that's not really a law in the books. It's a legislative rule. So they did not change the IPRA law. And I think Matt's right that it's going to be in court.
Mm-hmm.
And the obvious problem there is that if people want to conduct public business in private email, it becomes a secret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks to you all for your time this morning. Matthew Reichbach with nmtelegram.com, Steve Terrell with the Santa Fe New Mexican and the Roundhouse Roundup blog, and Marisa DeMarco with New Mexico Compass. That's nmcompass.com. We have links to all of their online news information at kunm.org. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, engineering this morning by Marshall Boyles, and your calls were screened by Andy Lyman. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next Thursday morning at 8 o'clock here on KUNM.